This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Boils and ghouls, lock your doors and strap yourselves in. From Los Angeles, California, Bloody Disgusting presents the Boo Crew Podcast. Horror news, commentary, reviews, interviews, and more. With your hosts, Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio.
Hey there, friend. It's Trevor, and on behalf of myself, Lauren and Leo, welcome to your Boo Crew Podcast, episode 416. We sincerely hope you've been doing well in theaters everywhere as of Friday, April 5th. It's Arkasha Stevenson's The First Omen. We cannot say enough incredible things about this film. It is a stunning experience, a masterfully directed vision. You've got the score from Mark Corvin, who did The Witch and The Black Phone, the cinematographer from Evil Dead 2013, Aaron Morton, and it's anchored by these beautifully haunting performances, Ralph Fiennes and Bill Nye, and its star, Nell Tiger-Free. Nell is a mesmerizing storyteller. There's no other way to say it. What she brings to the festivities here will genuinely haunt you forever. This is going down in horror history. We are thrilled to bring you into this conversation with Nell. She is so awesome. We're going to do a spoiler-free journey into her story, her genuine passion for the horror genre, and the iconic Omen franchise, including her adventure in bringing this nightmare to life. Thank you so much for being a part of this and for spending some time with us. Episode 416 with the inimitable Nell Tiger-Free is now slaying.
Hi, it's Nell Tiger-Free, and you are listening to the Antichrist's favorite podcast, Bloody Disgusting's Boo Crew.
Go ahead, scream. That's all we need.
Another victim crawls onto the gurney for a Boo Crew autopsy.
Joining Bloody Disgusting's Boo Crew in the Speakeasy Studio is a truly enthralling and gifted storyteller. At only 11 years old, she began to develop her passion for bringing worlds to life during Saturday drama classes, a trajectory that was meant to be, as by 13, she was already featured in a multi-award-winning independent film and a BAFTA-nominated TV project. By 14, landing a role in one of the most highly regarded series ever created, with Game of Thrones. She was cast in the enigmatic Nicholas Refn's wonderful neo-noir Too Old to Die Young, and captivated audiences everywhere with the brilliantly complex and mysterious Leanne Grayson in M. Night Shyamalan's virtuosic Servant for Apple TV, instrumental in earning the series 5 awards, an Emmy nod, and a Saturn nomination for Best Supporting Actress. She has this remarkable gift of enchanting audiences with characters that feel so intense and so real every single time, doing so by guiding us along her path of discovering these moments in the powerful story she has chosen to tell. She thrives in that perfect alchemy. This not only makes her an exceptional actor, her fearless approach and boundless exploration makes her one of the most important and exciting actors of our generation. It is why in her latest film, you'll quite literally feel the air sucked out of the theater with a depth of performance you have never quite felt before, immortalized by the gasps and silence of a fully immersed packed house. You will get the chance to experience this in theaters everywhere for yourself. As of April 5th, a woman starts to question her own faith when she uncovers a terrifying conspiracy to bring about the birth of evil incarnate. The film is The First Omen, and we are deeply honored to welcome its star, Nell Tiger-Free.
Woo! That's honestly the nicest thing anyone's ever said.
Oh my
about
God, what are you talking about?
I'm like welling up. Like, oh,
get used to it,
like,
because my gosh.
Thank you so much.
Every word honestly deserved. And, you know, I've been reading through the reviews, and I mean, we saw the movie. We shared an experience indirectly with you a few nights ago at the Vox Theater, right? Oh my gosh. Everybody's saying the same things. I mean, everything you were doing in this movie, people were just, the silence all around is everyone just living inside this thing. I've never seen anything like it, and we see hundreds of horror movies every
year. Yes, wow. That feels like very high praise, judging by the decor.
It's so. So I will say to anyone listening, this is an event experience. And I got to also say, what a hell of a way to spend Good Friday.
Absolutely.
Celebrating a film about the birth of the Antichrist.
Absolutely.
Man, how's that for timing? It's great. So we wanted to start just at the beginning, as far as just you and your love of horror, your own personal relationship with the genre as an audience member. What was the first horror film or TV experience you had with the genre? What was your takeaway? How did it make you feel?
So the first horror film I ever saw actually is still my favorite to this day. I was around 10 and I watched It. The original
yes,
It.
The original, yeah, the TV miniseries.
With Tim Curry.
Thing. Yes.
And it blew my mind. I was terrified, but like enthralled and sucked in, and I just got bitten by the bug. And so I started watching every horror movie that was available on YouTube in 124 parts for me to watch. And I sort of sucked the marrow out of all of horror that I could possibly get my hands on. And so this is why it's a real privilege to be in this building right now. I mean, this is absolutely fantastic. I was like a kid in a candy store. It is my favorite genre, and it's my favorite genre to watch, and subsequently has become my favorite to perform. And
right.
This is so fun, it being such a big part of my adult life and was such a big part of my childhood experience. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you seen anything recent that you can recommend to people?
I really liked The Watcher. It was a slow burn, and it just got under my skin and made me feel icky. And I don't know if I would call it true horror, but it definitely fell under that umbrella. And it had me silent the whole time. And I like to shout at the TV, and I just was silent. And I was really, really, I was really, really wrapped with it. I thought it was fantastically done.
As someone with a really musical side and background, when was the first time you remember noticing the music and sound of horror? Twilight Zone, yeah.
That just gets you right there. The Twilight Zone is brilliant. And then, you know, that kind of motif, that musical motif of like the repetitive staccato high notes, we see that in so many so much iconic music that accompanies horror films, like The Exorcist. Mm-hmm. It's just you hear those notes and you know exactly what's happening. Jaws, like that low formidable two-tone.
Yeah,
you know exactly what's going on. And it's just, I think if you have a good piece of music that accompanies a terrifying imagery, it's like it's hard to not sit up and listen.
Right.
It's just such an important part of it, you know. And we're lucky that we had a fantastic score. We had a fantastic source material for The Omen.
Mark Corvin doing his magic, the guy from The Witch.
So good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Honor. Was that the first time you saw the film with the score and everything intact, or had you seen it before?
I'd seen it once before.
Yeah.
And just a couple of days before with my dad, just the two of us on our own in a screening room.
I love that.
It was one hell of an experience. It really, really was. But you know what? A lot of the time while I was shooting, while I was filming, I'm actually hearing the score, because Karsha would play it with these giant speakers. She would play it for me sometimes when there wasn't dialogue, so I could just kind of feel it. So I'm experiencing it along with you.
Wow, that is so cool.
It was great.
What did you feel that his particular score elevated as far as performance goes, or just what did it create? What kind of mood did it create for you?
It would change the energy in the room immediately. I mean, we could all be, because we like to have a good time. We need to when we're making this kind of movie. Mm-hmm. We'd all be laughing and joking, and then you'd just hear the first notes, you'd hear the score come on, and it was like everybody just kind of went quiet.
Yeah.
And we were there, and then we were making it, and it was like, it helped me so much, because I felt like I was in the world and the things were happening, because, you know, you feel like you've stepped inside the movie, and it was just fantastically helpful and such a great thing that Karsha always had those giant speakers with her.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, about, you know, when it comes to Mark Corvin's work, it's so, I hate to use the word immersive, but it's what
immersive.
It really is.
It is.
Yeah,
it
it's
is.
All encompassing, and it gets so, he's got a way of this like conveying evil.
Yeah.
So well,
yeah,
that I've never heard anybody do it quite like him before.
Yeah.
And it's terrifying music
to hear.
He
uses a lot of demonic chords. It's actually a demonic chord, and he uses
really?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah, it's like supposed to be the most like jarring sound that you can hear. Like it's a collection of notes that just immediately will set your teeth on edge a little bit.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. You should look into it. It's used a lot in horror.
It's embedded in the first Omen. I love that. So was the original Omen something that was a natural part of your journey as a horror fan, or was it something you discovered through the opportunity of being in this film?
Oh gosh, I saw that one when I was 11. That was under the belt already, all of them. It's kind of an inescapable franchise if you're a horror mm-hmm. fan. I mean, and it's kind of, some of us, our bread and butter. For me, it was. And it's, for me, it is the bar, the original Omen. That's what you're trying to achieve when you're making like A-class horror. Is like, it's just one of my favorite films of all time. And Karsha describes it. She says it never read as a horror film to me. It read as a family drama.
Mm.
And like, I never saw it. You never didn't watch it and take it in as that. And like, for me, I was like, really? Because I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And just the subtlety of it, the imagery, the acting, the performance, the score, everything just marries together for this like deliciously disturbing cacophony of wonderfulness. And I just adored it.
And it's no secret that Servant is hands down the most compelling piece of televised entertainment ever made. Thank you for making such a perfectly addictive horror show, first of all. Let me tell you something. Like, Lauren and I love the series so much that we still haven't watched the last couple episodes because we're going to be depressed when there's nothing.
We're literally
like three episodes away from finishing it. We've held off for like a year.
Oh my gosh.
They did the Cheez's crust when they made the real Cheez's crust pizza.
We picked up the Cheez's crust.
We were sick over it.
I can send you the dress that I wore when I stabbed.
Oh my God. Come on. Don't tease us.
No,
what?
I that. It's yours.
Oh my God, dude.
I have it. Oh,
you are so
you
kind.
You do not have to, but wow.
I mean, I just kind of want to be involved in the setup. I just would like to join the show.
Whenever you're in town,
here,
come on over.
Like,
you can
take all of it, please. I want to be on the wall.
That would be amazing.
Well, I will say, so, we're obviously not the only fans of Servant. Everybody was watching the show wondering what you were going to do next. That show had fans, Guillermo del Toro, Stephen King were obsessed with that show. That's insane.
That was lovely.
And to see that this is your next project out of that is so, so perfect. And Leanne's character arc across, you know, whatever the 40 or so episodes was absolutely insane and unprecedented and required an incredible amount of commitment to performance from you. There's nothing you didn't do on that show. And you did it so well. How did your work and experience on that show change you forever and inadvertently prepare you for what would be your journey into the First Omen?
It absolutely did change me. I mean, I was 19 when I started the show and I had all of these ideas of like what it meant to act and what it meant to really, you know, I thought I knew everything initially. And then day one, I was like, oh, I have so much to learn. And I'm like excited to learn it. Being under the watchful eye of M. Night was very, very helpful. And, it was kind of like my own personal university, like my own personal college. Like I grew up on that set. I went from 19 to 23, and those are pretty transitional years for a young girl, for anybody. And I felt like I went from girl to woman. I felt like I went from almost child actor to actress. Do you know what I mean? I was so lucky to be surrounded by Rupert and Toby and Lauren and Knight, and they just, I watched them like a hawk, like in almost borderline creepily, because I just was fascinated with the way that they conducted themselves at work, with how it was a collaborative experience. I was always read my lines, turn up, do them. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I wasn't used to being asked my opinion in my previous projects, you know, and then all of a sudden I was being asked my opinion and I had to kind of formulate one. I was like, hang on a second, I need to actually have an opinion.
Right, have something ready.
I need to be ready for this. And so that kind of let me dive deeper into all of it. And M. Night picked up on some bad habits that I had picked up on, you know, and he called me out for them. And I'm so grateful to that, because at the time, obviously, I was like, oh my God, how could I be terrible? He doesn't want me in the show. But all he was doing was trying to get the best out of me. And he did it with just the most thoughtful conversation, and he would show me things and be like, what does that look like to you? Does that feel real? Do you feel it? Because if you don't feel it, you can't do it. And so, and that I've carried with me, that I carried with me from season one to season four, and now thankfully onto The Omen.
So in April 2016 was when we first kind of caught wind that they were about to start making film. So was that, like, how far back did your involvement go in that project?
Oh gosh, I mean, I came on 2 weeks before we started filming.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. We started filming. Yeah, I was right at the end.
Yeah.
And then we just all of a sudden I was on a plane and I was in a nun's outfit and it was
doing
fantastic.
Some of the most intense acting we've ever seen in our lives. So
I didn't know how intense it was going to be, and it just, I loved it. It was great.
Well, so many times when we see films that are canon to an existing horror franchise,
yeah,
they can sometimes get in their own way.
Absolutely.
And this is not the case at all with this one. It manages to not feel like it's treading old ground or a crowbarred in narrative or some nonsensical additive.
Yeah.
It's a completely unexplored path with a real story to tell that gives so much context to the franchise in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
And the script itself feels almost timeless. It's very lived in and genuine. What were some of the qualities that you loved about what was on the paper?
So initially, what was on the page I found was really, really strong. I was like immediately kind of breathed a sigh of relief. But because I'm a horror fan and I take it seriously, and The Omen is such an important part of that, I was like, and I actually don't think I was even attached yet. Like, I think that I was still in the audition process and they'd given me the script to read before I met Karsha. And I was nervous because I didn't know if I was doing the job, but I knew I wanted the film to be good because I really wanted there to be a fantastic prequel to The Omen.
Yeah.
And so when I read the script, I was like, oh, this is really smart. And they've actually done this really, really well. And they've crafted this in a way that feels palatable and enjoyable. And it feels like it belongs in the universe. Like, it feels like it doesn't feel like a shoehorned in kind of narrative for the sake of making content. And it isn't. And the reason this film has been, you know, incubated for like 7 or 8 years, like that the script and the idea and was passed through lots of different hands. And then it found its way to the team that ended up working on it and making it. And I was just so happy even reading it just from a fan's perspective, because I was like, if they do this well, even if I'm not involved, it's going to be fantastic, but please God, let me be involved. Please cast me. And thank fuck they did.
I will say that this film also addresses a lot of real world themes and true life horrors. What do you think it is about the horror genre that just beautifully explores those, you know, that lens of horror, exploring these things and addressing them through the lens of horror? Mm-hmm. What makes that so powerful?
Because it's a way to address things without having to spoon feed them to people. Mm-hmm. It's a way to tackle things from a lens of entertainment, but also saying, well, you know, there are things that you could dissect and look at here, but it's not the main point of the experience. It's not the main focus of the story. You know, really the focus is and the intention is to entertain and for you to have a good time and for you to feel fulfilled and like you've had a successful theater experience, you know. But at the crux of it, these are true life issues that we are dealing with, obviously in a more exaggerated way. But at the end of the day, you know, there is a theme thematically. We do tackle, you know, women being able to take control of their own bodies. We do tackle sexual assault. And granted, you know, we are doing it in a way that isn't particularly common. And I won't spoil anything for you there. But these are core themes of the movie. And they're not there because, you know, they're not there to spoon feed or give you anything specifically, but they are there to drive the story forward. And none of it's gratuitous, and none of it's, we're not trying to, you know, scream a message in your faces. It's just, this needed to be here for the movie to make sense. And it needed to be there to marry into the original franchise, you know? And I think that it's an important thing, but it's not the only thing. And it was really rewarding and satisfying to do it with Karsha and for us to both be like, what would we be comfortable as women watching? What would we be comfortable performing? You know, and I never did anything that I knew Karsha wouldn't be 100% comfortable doing herself. So it was a great experience.
The Boo Crew will be right back.
From the eternal sea, he rises, creating armies on either shore, turning man against his brother, till man exists no more.
For everything known, there is something unknown. For every blessing, there is a curse.
This is not a human child.
For everything holy, there is something unholy. For every evil, there is an omen. 20th Century Fox presents The Omen, starring Gregory Peck and Lee Remick.
I need to see a psychiatrist. I have fears.
What kind of fears?
It is a mystery beyond human solution. It is suspense beyond human tolerance. It is a warning mankind has feared for thousands of years. It is The Omen. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent. You have been warned.
I wanted to dissect the following a little bit. At the helm of this vision is obviously Arkasha, who we have been just huge fans of. She did this bonkers TV show, Brand New Cherry Flavor.
Yes.
Right? And she's done Channel Zero. Just this wild creative. It's unbelievable that this is her first feature.
Yeah.
Which is wild.
I know.
What sort of, I guess, how to put this? Your experience with her and how you feel that she created something so unique and galvanizing.
I just, as soon as I met Arkasha, I just thought, God, this is such a special person. This person is so special. You know what? If Kasha came here, you would never see her again. She would be lost in here for hours. She would be in here for 10 hours. I promise you, like this, she would get such a kick out of, because she loves the genre through and
through. You can tell.
And she, you can tell in the movie that she respects and loves the genre. The movie, I feel like, is almost like an ode, like a love letter to the original. It's like it borrows things, but it's all just like in like a, the way that she does it is like you can feel the love behind it, and you could feel the love in every sentence that she would speak to you. You know, it was all important to her. It wasn't just a job. She wasn't just making the movie because she could. It was like, this means something to me, and you could feel it, and it was just infectious, and it made us all care so much more, you know? And it was just such a special working environment and such a special relationship. And she's just such an important person to me now. And I'm just over the moon that she's getting the recognition and the credit that she deserves, because she is wildly talented.
Yeah, she hit it out of the park.
And I really think so. Yeah.
You can tell like there's serious and careful consideration into the composition of shots.
Yeah.
There's not one frame wasted. Each one is painted almost like a beautiful Baroque painting. And it really seems to empower you to deliver these mesmerizing and physical performances as well. It's one of the many aspects of what you bring to this that everybody's talking about. Things as detailed as you falling into a beam of light in a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? And as much as it feels so instinctual and natural, it's so beautiful that I can't help but think there's a tremendous amount of intentional choreography that goes into this. Can you let us in on a little bit of that? Like, what's going on behind the scenes to make everything just look so beautiful, empowering?
Yeah, well, performance-wise, there's actually little to no choreography performance-wise. I mean, it's a lot of it is just like she would give us a lot of free rein to just feel things, which was wonderful and so much fun. I mean, technically, behind the scenes, those shots, you know, they are all specific and they're all there intentionally, and it's intentionally beautiful. It's quite polarizing that it's so beautiful to look at, but so uncomfortable to experience.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first saw the monitors, because I hadn't looked at them like for a while. And I remember when I first saw them and I saw the shot that we were doing, and I just thought, it just added like this layer of excitement that I didn't even know was possible, because I didn't realize how beautiful everything was looking behind the camera.
Sure.
Because I was there and I was doing it. And, you know, you can't feel what it's going to look like until you start to see fragments of it. And I was seeing pieces of it, and I just was thinking, oh my God, I think this is going to be really, really special. And it translates beautifully. I mean, she just, the shots are beautiful. They were a privilege to perform, honestly.
And then you got Aaron Morton, the cinematographer, and Aaron Morton's the guy who's a cinematographer of Evil Dead 2013.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. You can feel that energy on that, right? Because that movie's terrible. Evil Dead 2013 is also another one of our faves.
Yeah.
To see him involved in this and to see him
Ron's
in that world.
Genius.
My God.
He's a genius. The combination of Ron and Arkasha, unstoppable.
Yeah.
Honestly, they are just most incredible pair of minds to work in tandem. They are fantastic. It was just amazing. It was really great.
And you make countless fearless decisions as an actor in this, and it's intoxicating to watch. It is so scary, because it feels like when you're watching it, it's a total free fall. We're at the mercy of where you are in the film. It's completely unpredictable in every way. What did Arkasha do to make you feel safe and supported to the extent that you felt you were able to completely surrender yourself to story?
Yeah, I think the way you describe that is perfect, is that the film is needed to feel like a free fall. And it was intentional that at the beginning, everything is beautiful. It's like we start in heaven when she gets off of the plane and you see the light and it's just, it feels heavenly. And then we end very, very much in hell. And that's the trajectory. And it's like the slow, it's like the inferno all the way down to hell. And that was something that I was aware of, was our trajectory at the very beginning. And it's exhausting falling down to hell. It's a tiresome job. But under the watchful eye of Kasia, it felt, I don't want to say easy, because it wasn't, but it felt worth it. And it felt like it was the most rewarding experience doing it with her, because she respected and the material and the love and the work and the genre so much. I knew I was in safe hands. I knew we had this one reference. And when I saw it, my perspective on the movie changed quite early on, because I was excited to make a true horror. And I that was the thing that I was the most excited about. And then very quickly it just became, I'm excited to come to work and work with Kasia. Mm-hmm. And it's because there were things that I did on this movie that I didn't think, I could physically get to or could physically perform. And just seeing her face, it just, I could. So she just fostered the most fantastic working environment, and it made us all want to push ourselves and all want to do the craziest shit she wanted. It really did.
It's no secret that the first Omen is regarded as the most cursed film.
Yeah.
In history.
Ever made, yeah.
Yes, the original. Did you guys bless the set? Was anything done to prevent?
We didn't want to prevent it. We wanted some shit
just
to go down.
Just embrace the evil.
We wanted to. Anytime something freaky would happen, we would all get so excited. I promise you, it was such a collection of fucking weirdos.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Really are, like all of us.
That's so great.
Anything creepy happen that wasn't planned?
Oh yeah. Oh, we had some stuff for sure.
Like paranormal stuff?
Yeah, or? The spill.
I mean, one would assume it was, I mean, Ralph had a lot of stuff happen to him, and he was playing, Father Brennan,
yeah,
who obviously we all know the fate of eventually. He got bitten by a dog very early on and couldn't come to work. His daughter was coming to shoot because she had a part in the movie, and she was attacked by a murder of crows the day before. There was a moment on set where I was like zoning out, and it was me and Ralph and Tafiq, and we just filmed a very intense scene, a very intense moment. And I was kind of in like this daze, and I was staring at his crucifix that he was wearing around his neck in character, his crucifix. And I was just transfixed on it, and we were all silent. And I watched it, and Tafiq saw it too. It snapped in half and just slid off of his neck.
What?
Oh my gosh, I would have screamed.
And we were all like, did you see that? Like, we were
this
so
is awesome.
Excited.
We've summoned the devil.
We were so excited. I would get knocks on the door of my dressing room. I would go and answer. There was nobody there. It was just countless crazy. Two people. My plane got struck by lightning twice. Ralph's plane got struck by lightning.
And really? Even
more.
The planes got struck by lightning?
Yes.
Same like the first curse.
Oh my gosh.
Two planes struck by lightning.
That is insane.
I know. I know.
Was there any, let's get into Margaret a little bit,
sure,
as far as you finding her, I guess. I'm curious, do you ever use music to find a character, to help you find a character?
I don't really do anything.
Yeah.
I know that sounds like I'm, but I promise it's just, I've always worked best kind of on the fly.
Okay.
And I mean, what was helpful with the music is that Akash would play it to help me get into a scene.
Sure.
It helped me kind of feel the atmosphere of the scene and where we were in the story.
But you wouldn't like make a playlist and listen to it on your own while thinking of the character.
No,
anything,
I mean, I had Bill who would just knock on my door and play the Rolling Stones really loud at me. And I don't know if that was Margaret's vibe. Or he'd be in his full Cardinals outfit dancing outside my trailer to James Brown and like stuff like that. Like, but I've never really had any devices or tools or anything like that to kind of get into a character. I always just kind of, I never think it's going to happen until we start rolling, and then they just kind of appear.
Wow. it's so fun to watch you and your character kind of enter this new world that we get to enter with you. So we're meeting a lot of these people that you're meeting for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And one of the most fun moments is when you first meet, is it Carlita?
Carlita.
Yes. Mm. It's an exceptionally spooky moment. What can you tell us about filming that scene and just kind of going through the motions with her? Had you rehearsed it with her prior? Did you save a lot of that for elements of surprise?
We saved some of it. We filmed that scene really, really early on. Really early on. So me and Nicole didn't really know each other that well at that point. But we certainly got to know each other while making that scene. Nicole is fantastically talented, and she just has this look and these eyes that are kind of captivating. And I was just really impressed and excited on that day. And she had to lick my face many, many times. Many times. Like, it got to the point where she was like, my tongue is dry and Nell's face is very wet. And we just were like, fuck it. Like, let's just keep going. And we just did it so many times from so many different angles that by the end of it, we were just so used to it. It wasn't even a thought or a thing. There's a lot of face licking in The Omen.
Yeah, there is. There is
a lot of licking in The Omen. I was licked so many times by so many different objects and things.
That's the quote right there.
I got licked by this prosthetic and I was like, this is the weird, what series of decisions did I make in my life to lead this to being my job? Like, I've got a prosthetic tongue on a stick licking me 15 times in a row.
Was there a particular cast member that you found you bonded with the most?
To be honest, it was pretty equal. I mean, yeah. Obviously, we're different age ranges and, you know, different. We all come from it's a very international cast. We all come from all over the place. Me, Ishtar, and Tafik and Maria and Guido and Andrea, we're all of a similar age range and we spent a lot of concentrated time together. But genuinely, I have such genuine friendships with Ralph and Bill. And like, that's what's such a fun thing about making a movie is that you find yourself like you're all of a sudden best friends with someone who's like 65 mm-hmm, or like mm-hmm. in their 80s. And you're like, just socially hanging out with them, going for a drink and dinner with someone who's like 50 years older than you. And it feels like the most normal thing in the world.
And legends, right?
Yeah.
Bill Nye and Ralph Ineson. My God. They're Ralph legends. And his big, boomy baritone voice.
I'd love to hear his voice on this mic.
Oh my God. He'd probably bust the mic.
It would probably explode.
From
the decimal of it.
Well, I know we're reaching the end of our time here, but just a couple to get us out here. Wanted to address, as a horror fan, this film has a tremendous amount of extremely graphic, incredible things to see. You're just going to love it. It's a horror movie. You have no idea what's on your way. But a lot of people have heard that this film almost got that NC-17 rating.
It did.
The scene in particular that I'm referring to, as a horror fan, did you go and watch any of these scenes being filmed? Was it practical effects were they using a lot of?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty much all practical effects, this movie.
So,
like, honestly, like 99%. And it just lent itself to the feel of the film to have these things be tactile and touchable in there. 99% of what you're seeing, they're all real props somewhere, which I'm sure you guys are going to look for. But they were, and like, I didn't see that particular scene.
Got it.
I saw all the physicality that fantastic actress that she was performing I saw all of that. So I was very informed about what I was doing. But as far as that one shot goes, I didn't see that until I was doing ADR.
Oh, wow.
And Kasia was like, do you want to see it? I was like, yeah. And she played it for me. And she was watching my reaction. And I was like, fuck. like thrusting my, I was like full on Breakfast Club ending scene, like thrusting my fist into the air. I was so excited. And I just, and the guy who was doing the sound engineering for the ADR, he hadn't seen it yet. And he was pale. Like, he was actually like white as a ghost. And he turned to me, he was like, you're going to have some articles written about this.
Oh yeah. Already people were cheering in the theater.
Like,
they were losing it.
That was what an experience.
Yes. We don't get movies that do that much anymore. So that's really, really special. I just can't wait for everybody to see it. All right. So this film makes a fascinating addition, as we said, to the world of The Omen, now spanning this universe of films. What do you feel like this one just unlocks in terms of future possibilities?
They feel pretty endless. I mean, we've introduced so many new characters and so many new possibilities and ways that it could go. It could go in lots of different ways. It could end here, you know. It's just, I mean, we have like 7 years until the first, the original Omen is technically would be. So there's lots of room, and I don't know. I think that it's interesting, and it's fun to be able to see like these two stories running parallel to each other, you know, like what's going on in this world while that was going on in that world. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So sort of like a meanwhile somewhere in Northern Italy. But yeah, I think there's lots of room to explore different stories, and I'd be excited to see where they would go with it if they were to.
I'm sure they will. I like, honestly, mark my words, like you're going to get an Oscar nomination for this. It's like, without question.
I think that's,
and there's nobody that would argue
unlikely,
otherwise.
But thank you.
I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, everybody has been talking about this nonstop. I mean, you go online, there's not one bad review already. And when it comes to horror films like this, especially in canon and in existing universes, you hear that stuff. They're honest. You know,
they're honest
when things are so precious.
Welling up a little bit.
Sorry. Oh, but no, I'm serious. It's really, you guys really built something extraordinary and very important for the genre in moving it forward. And that's another thing people are saying. Not only does it raise the bar of what The Omen accomplished, but it raises the bar of everything that has come in the horror genre ever up to this point now. So it's a real game changer. And I just kudos to you and the whole team for making something so special for us and putting that out in the world.
I honestly can't tell you how overwhelmingly grateful everybody involved in this movie is for the response we've gotten so far. I mean, truly, like, we were all at dinner the other day and we were all just crying our eyes out because we just can't believe it. We're just so happy that people are enjoying this weird, wonderful thing that we've thrown at them. And I'm just so overwhelmed with all the kindness. So thank you.
Well, congratulations.
From the bottom of my heart.
One more question before we take off. The horror universe is big and expansive. Is there any existing franchise or any particular role or director you would love a chance to work with in the genre?
I don't know. I'm happy to. I want to try all of it. I'm happy. Yeah. I mean, right now, I feel like I was cheating on The Omen.
Sure. Of course.
I love it so much. And I know that there's a possibility that I could work in it for most of my career. And I think that's a really exciting prospect. Like, I would honestly jump into pretty much any franchise. I'd be so interested to have a go at being in The Terrifier.
I want to
face up to Art the Clown. I'm curious.
I bet we could probably pull some strings and see if we can make that happen, right? Oh my
Even
god,
if it's just
that
like
would be
a
incredible.
Sketch or like a cameo or something. I don't know, but that would be a lot of fun to do.
I love hearing that. I'm sure a lot of people do too. All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap it up. The first Omen is in theaters everywhere April 5th. Go see it 666 times. Now, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure, to say the least.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Let's do this again.
Absolutely. Again. Whenever you want. I just want to come back.
Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Nell.
You.
You're the best. And that was your Boo Crew Podcast, episode 416. Isn't she amazing? Special thanks to our guest, the one and only Nell Tiger Free. At time of release, you can see The First Omen in theaters everywhere April 5th. You will not regret it. Production tracks for this episode provided by the good folks at Power Man 5000. You like what you hear and you want to support the cause? All we ask is for a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Tell your friends about us and please join the family. We're so happy to have you. Till next time, on behalf of myself, Lauren and Leo, my name is Trevor. It's the Boo Crew saying, sweet screams.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Boo Crew Podcast. Haunt the Boo Crew at TalesFromTheBooCrew.com. Tales from the Boo Crew on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us on Twitter at TalesFromTheBoo. The Boo Crew is Lauren and Trevor Shand and Leone D'Antonio. The Boo Crew is produced by Lauren Shand, chopped and sliced by Trevor Shand. The Boo Crew is a TSP creation, part of the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
Bye.
A Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, home of the Boo Crew. For horror-centric interviews, SCP archives, weekly full-cast storytelling, horror queers, genre commentary from an LGBTQ perspective, and creepy. For disturbing and terrifying creepypastas. Listen free wherever you stream audio and at bloodydisgusting.com/podcasts.